We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank. Coming up, the latest episode of Outside the Trenches with former Chiefs reporter and insider B.J. Kissel, Super Bowl champion and former K-State All-American offensive lineman Nick Leckie, and KCSN producer Tucker Franklin. The latest headlines, stories, and rumors, plus a blind nail segment where nobody knows what's going to happen. The latest Outside the Trenches, presented by Five Farms Irish Cream, a holiday distillery favorite, starts now. Let's go to B.J. Kissel.
What's going on, Chiefs Kingdom? Welcome to this special live episode of Outside the Trenches. I'm B.J. Kissel, joined by Jordan Foote, Craig Stout, and Tucker Franklin tonight. We appreciate you for joining us. We've got some news, fellas, the Chiefs going out. I'm sure that's why everybody's tuned in right now if you're listening or watching this live. That the Chiefs went out and signed former San Francisco 49 defensive lineman. We'll call him an edge. Call him a guy who could slide inside in passing situations. But Charles Amenihu, excited to get everybody's takes. Please, if you're following along on YouTube, give us those questions. Give us those comments. We'll bring them on and react to them. But Craig, I got to start with you as the defensive guy, the defensive line guy. Give us your immediate reaction when you saw the news of the Chiefs signing Charles Amenihu to a two-year $16 million deal, $60 million total, not $16 million per year.
Yeah. Juice, tons of juice, crazy explosive there, 91st percentile vertical jump, 70th percentile broad jump. And oh yeah, the length that Steve Spagnuolo wants, 97th percentile in wingspan and 98th in arm length. Typically, those two things don't blend together in this way. A 6'5", 280-pound guy that can rush from the outside, kick inside. Steve Spagnuolo, like, honestly, going into this free agency period, not a ton of buzz around him. We'll get to why here in just a little bit here. But yeah, this is a guy that Steve Spagnuolo would have kind of molded in his image, in his defense right here, which is the flexibility to play outside, inside, burst to win up the arc, power to win through a tackle. There's a lot of positives as a pass rusher for Charles Amenihu, and he's coming off of his best season in San Francisco, a kind of a factory for defensive linemen in the NFL right now. Chiefs got a guy for pretty cheap here that I think is going to have a major impact as a pass rusher.
I think it's the perfect move because we talk so much about heading into the draft. You start, you know, plugging holes or you start adding bodies where you know you need help and you don't pigeonhole yourself into having to draft or overdraft a player. And with the Amenihu signing, you knew they were going to get an edge at some point. But now looking at the draft, does this change your draft if there's a guy that you really like that's an edge rusher there at the end of the first round? Or if you take a guy in the sixth round that you really like, that really have a lot of flexibility now because they can trust the Amenihu, again, a young ascending player, 25 years old, turns 26 this summer, that can go out there and start if needed and give you a lot of snaps. Jordan, what was your reaction when you saw the news?
I think they needed it, right, at some point, whether it was going to be bringing Frank Clark back, whether it was going to be going after someone else on the free agent market. They were going to need to replace that production. And this is a team, Spags is going to Spags, right? They got the Spags guy. He fits into a T. He has the versatility up and down the defensive line a little bit if needed. Now they have Mike Dana in there. They have George Karlaftis. You can argue about, is this an edge 2 signing? Is this an edge 3 signing? Do they bring in someone else? That answer potentially is yes, regardless of if it's still Frank Clark or Carlos Dunlap or whoever. To answer your question, though, about the draft, I think it could change their plans a little bit. Like, the Chiefs are slowly chipping away at their quote-unquote needs, where if you're still at pick 31 and the board falls your way, you can take a guy you like instead of a guy you need. That's a big deal. That wasn't the first thing I thought of, but I think that's the most important thing that at least I can think of.
For me, it fits the mold of what we've seen from Brett Veach. It seems like every offseason, this is what they do. They already did it with tackle, where we're having a very similar conversation on the other side of the ball that, oh, that gives them flexibility. They have options as it relates to the draft. Tucker, what was your reaction when you saw the news?
I think the biggest thing was the age, right? 25 turns 26 in August, as you mentioned, BJ. And again, getting younger on that front. Earlier, I think it was late last night, I think it was, when the Chiefs came to a deal with Tershawn Wharton, which is going to be a very young defensive front when you got those guys out there. And I think that's exciting. Taylor, 25. Omenihu, 25. Turk is still young as well. Shout out David Reed for that comment. There's clearly a plan to get some youth on this team, and a plan that Brett Veach is following very well. I like it. I like it a lot. And it seems like we talk every year that the Chiefs need an edge rusher, right? And they finally went out and got one. And it's it feels good to get that kind of crossed off the list early on in the offseason.
I'm looking forward to talking with Matt Miller tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
For our weekly, we'd normally talk about draft. We're actually going to be talking about some of the edge rushers coming up in this class, which would be a fun one with guys that, Craig, you guys talked to out at the East-West Shrine Bowl, but also a 49er fan and a Texas fan. So it seems like the perfect person to talk to tomorrow morning to get his thoughts on this. But Craig, as you mentioned off the top, not just what he can do on the field, but when it comes to kind of the free agency, talking about top players, there's some stuff hanging over his head right now with Charles Omenihu.
Yes, absolutely. Back in January, right before the NFC Championship game, Omenihu, playing for the 49ers, was called for a domestic violence incident here. Reportedly, officers showed up at his San Jose home with a report of domestic abuse. A woman who stated that she was Omenihu's girlfriend told responding officers that Omenihu pushed her to the ground during an argument. No charges were really brought. I mean, they booked at the jail. Released after posting bail. There's an ongoing investigation, but obviously not great. And that's why he's coming in at the price and the availability that he is for such a young player with those sorts of measurables and a guy that's coming off the best season of his career. I would imagine this is an incentive-laden contract. I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of stipulations placed in it that the Chiefs can get out of it if another incident like this occurred. But it is an incident that, you know, it seems as of late, the Chiefs have been taking chances on these types of guys. And while they've been in-house, they've done a good job of keeping that kind of in-house, improving some of these guys as individuals. You're not seeing reoccurring things very often, if at all. So it is a good environment for this individual to be in coming off of this, but that is the elephant in the room. That's why other teams weren't going near him. That's why he wasn't kind of on everybody's lists for top free agents, because they don't know. They don't know what his availability is going to be. Is he going to catch a suspension? Is this going to be a thing where, you know, further down the road that's going to be needed to be investigated or maintained of some kind? The Chiefs certainly have some experience with this, but it's going to remain to be seen what the full fallout of this is going to be, because it did just happen in January.
Right. I believe somebody in the chat said 30 days ago was the arrest. So it is a very recent thing to look at. And yeah, I you think that the Chiefs would do the due diligence in terms of what they would do with signing him. So you think that they kind of have a good idea, a pretty great idea of what's going on in this situation. So yeah, curious to see what that happens. I think I saw some people speculating or asking if there'd be a suspension coming. I think you could probably just assume that there will be something, just because based off of, you know, I think Willie Gay last year had a suspension. Was it four games, a suspension for Willie Gay? And Frank Clark, I believe, had a two-game suspension. So you could probably bank on between anywhere from a two and a four game, maybe even to a six-game suspension looking here.
Yeah. Well, and I think Tuck and Craig and BJ, there, if out of all the places he could have went in free agency, I think this is probably the best one in terms of the infrastructure and like the support they have in place. And You know, you never want to minimize stuff like that, and speculation can be a really slippery slope. But for him to land in Kansas City and have the support and have the teammates and have the coaching staff and have the community that he's going to have, I think that is something that, you know, it matters. It might not be the end-all be-all, but I think that is something to take into account. And we'll see what happens with the suspension. With the NFL, like Tucker said, you almost have to assume stuff like that's going to occur with the disciplinary process. But if he is in Kansas City, you know, that is a better alternative than a lot of spots. And I think personally and professionally, it's probably one of the better situations for him.
And you obviously know it's something that the Chiefs would have looked into, and that we will only get, you know, some of the information, not all of it. We have to trust those that are looking into this. That's their jobs, that that they do it. Sounds like unfortunate situation, but something that is obviously going to follow him here to Kansas City. The reason is a 2-year deal. He's going to have a chance to come here. And whether there's a suspension, whatever it is, serve that and then become a free agent again at 27 years old. And so we'll stick to kind of the on the field stuff here for the next 10 minutes or so. And then we'll get into the second half of the show. And because it's outside the trenches, you know, that means that it's going to be a blind nil segment that Mr. Craig Stout, Mr. Craig is great, has never done before. So excited about that with him. But, Craig, I do want to get your thoughts on the idea we talked about a minute ago and kind of how it relates to the draft and the market and all the reasons why, but just picturing him in a passing situation down next to Chris Jones, is there a better kind of mental picture for people to look at when talking about the upside of what this move is than putting him down there? You already mentioned guys like Mike Dana, Turk Wharton coming back, some guys that have had some early success before, obviously, Wharton's injury.
I mean, he's used to playing next to superhumans on a 49ers line, so he's going to fit right at home, right next to Chris Jones there. So he knows how to win. He's going to get a lot of one-on-ones. You can't double-team two guys if they're rushing from the interior. But I think you're also going to see a lot of situations, even with Mike Dana, George Karloftis, who have rushed from the interior as well, being able to kick out to defensive end. Those can be your four with a Turk Wharton rotating in there, with those guys being able to mix and match. This is, we talk a lot about hybrid and amoebic secondaries there. When you get into obvious passing situations, which the Chiefs theoretically should see themselves in a lot of those on defense with teams trying to play catch up, you can leave those guys on the field, and any one of them can play defensive end. Any one of them can play defensive tackle. And so it gives you that flexibility. You're sitting there at 31 or 63, and you see a guy falling down the board that you're going, oh, that's not supposed to be there. Think Trent McDuffie last year. Not a guy that the Chiefs expected to be there, decided to move up and go get that guy because they saw talent, they saw value. There's nothing precluding them from adding another defensive tackle, from adding a defensive end, and they can make these guys in the rotation work. It's kind of the same thing that we talked about with Jawan Taylor earlier this week. The flexibility to play left tackle or right tackle gives you the flexibility to draft either one as it flows through there. This is just another example of that, and a positive one in that regard, because that just... Brett Veach doesn't want to have holes. He doesn't want to be pinned down to a position, like Jordan said earlier. This is ultimate flexibility at a couple different positions now.
Yeah, I think this is a guy, among all qualifying edges, his 75.3 pass rush grade was 28th. He was 16th among all qualifying defensive ends slash edges with 39 hurries. And I'm going to steal this from Tucker Franklin, our substitute analytics department for the night. Here's the list of edge rushers in the NFL last year who had a higher win percentage than Omena, who is a pass rusher. You guys ready for the list? Craig, you ready?
I'm ready.
Myles Garrett, pretty good player.
Good.
Nick Bosa, say he's all right. Micah Parsons, he's pretty decent. Zadarius Smith, Trey Hendrickson.
Agent.
And then Omena, who was also top 15 in total pressure.
It's up there.
So that's pretty good company to have.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is. You see his pressure rate is very, very high. That's to be expected. Again, he caught a lot of one-on-ones on that 49ers defensive line there. It's to be expected from that regard. But if you look at the pressures overall for the Kansas City Chiefs defense last year, it really is just Chris Jones that was ahead of him. And I know that Omenihu is not a true three-down player. He's going to play some. He's going to start, but not a guy that you're going to say, okay, you're a 280-pound defensive tackle that's going to kick in the inside there or play defensive end. Probably going to be more of a second and third down type player. They've used guys like that before. They know how to. That's not a negative. But you're probably going to see his pressure rate continue because he's going to be in more obvious passing situations.
I love it. We do. I saw the chat when I was talking about Tershawn Wharton only being 25. They were quick to say, hey, listen, Mike Dana's 25. Mike Dana had the career year coming off of it. So, look, the Chiefs have some youth on that offensive front. That's nothing that, or the defensive front, I should say, and getting there on the offensive side, too. But you're not here to hear about the offensive line. I think that this is a really exciting move. I think a lot of people are, maybe because it came at such a late time of the night, people are kind of confused by it. I've seen kind of mixed reactions on social media as I've kind of been scrolling through, looking at and trying to find some stuff up. But overall, I think I'm excited for this. I think this is an exciting ad on the field for the Chiefs.
I think it's just the perfect time. I mean, we talked through kind of some of the reasons why, and not to gloss over those as it relates to the strategy behind the move. But, 2 years for a player at 25 or, soon to be 26 years old, 27 years old, right in the prime of his athleticism is what he wants his career to be. I think there's a lot to like about the move. And we talk about the flexibility it gives going into the draft. This is a very Chiefs-like thing to do. You can talk about it every year. The positions change, but they always seem to plug up holes, per se, with veterans who could start or give you a lot of snaps if needed, so that by the time you get to the draft, you don't have to, again, to kind of the point that everybody's made and Jordan you made earlier, not have to reach for a guy that you might not like quite as much because you feel like you really need to add some bodies there. So again, we appreciate everybody for hanging out. Please hit that like and subscribe. If this is the first time you're hanging out with us at KC Sports Network, hit that like, subscribe, take a look around and see what else we've got here on the channel. But please give us your grades. I saw one right here from Mahomes, 72-62, gives it a C because you've never heard of him before 15 minutes ago. If each is back like him, we should as well. If you go back and check the social media account that just came up, I just put out on Twitter and retweeted a video I did when Charles Amenhu was coming out of the draft. I remember being a player that I really liked because he fit the Spags mold and all of his athleticism and just a disruptive guy in the interior of that defensive line or wherever he needs to. But give us those grades. Let us know what you think. Before we go to our first break, let's get a round of grades here from our hosts. Jordan, we'll start with you. What's your grade for this move?
I've seen a couple B pluses in the chat. I'm going to go like a solid B. It's hard to tell exactly how much he's going to cash in on that potential. Potential suspension aside, all that good stuff, like just the player, the move, the contract, the value. I think a solid B. It could turn out to be an A minus. It could turn out to be a B minus, maybe even a C plus. I don't think it's going to turn out to be a bad move. I know I gave you a wide range of potential grades there. I'm going to commit to a solid B based on my knowledge tonight.
All right, Tucker, let's go to you next.
I like this one. I was looking at the comment section here, the chat. Pink Patty McGee says Veach Plus. That's a good grade, and I want to stick with that one. That's what I think I'm going to give it, because yeah, there is that suspension that is looming over kind of this whole signing, and I think that if there wasn't, I think it would be a pretty good, be a pretty solid B plus A minus. But I think I'll go with a B minus outside of my Veach Plus, obviously.
Yeah, I'm going to go B minus the off the field stuff. We'll see what that comes. So it can definitely upgrade there. I don't think he solves the rotation. He gives you another good body. And if you want to throw waves at the position, that's fine. If that's their solution this year, it makes sense. But it doesn't fix it or lock it down long term. Thing that kind of boosts it into that B for me right now, this is a former fifth round pick. Didn't have a ton of production on the field at Houston. Goes to the 49ers, and everybody just seems to get better there. They learn more. They grow as players. He's a better player now than he was before he went to San Francisco, and you're getting him for reportedly, what they're saying here, it's going to be $8 million APY with incentives to boost it to 20. $8 million APY, that puts him level with guys that are picked in the top five of the NFL draft. So guys like Chase Young, guys, like Josh Allen, when they're on their rookie deals, and you didn't have to spend a first rounder for him. It's hard to find guys at that price that can give you 50% of the snaps and play at a high enough level to impact the game. I think he's going to. So yeah, solid B minus for me there. Really positive.
EJ, do you have a grade?
I'm going to give it a solid B plus, and I'm not disagreeing with anything that any of you guys said. I just trust within the off the field stuff that the Chiefs did their due diligence and they feel comfortable enough to not just give a one, but to give a 2-year deal with all of this stuff kind of hanging out there, that they've got some people, just like every team in the NFL does, they go out and vet this stuff and talk through every angle of it, talk with the player, obviously do whatever they need to do to come up with the decision that everybody in the organization feels comfortable with. And so that's why I'm giving it a B+. I think you're getting a motivated player again at 26, 27 years old. He will, from Omenihu's point of view, he's going to become a free agent again at 27. He's going to have opportunity with the best team in the NFL to go win Super Bowls, make impactful plays, and then become a free agent at 27 years old, and then get a chance to go get that money that the edge rushers that we see those top guys go out and get those multi-year deals. So, just for how does that work
here?
Okay.
The KCSN draft guide from the year he came out gave him a third round grade and gave him a super high fit, comped him to Taco Charlton because of his explosion and length. Looky there. Boy, that all worked out.
Those receipts are pretty clean, I will say that. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we're going to do blind nil. And I've got some free agency nuggets that I'm going to share with you.
You're listening to the fastest growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this.
Folks, I got to tell you about today's sponsor, and that is Athletic Greens. I've been taking AG1 by Athletic Greens literally every day, and I gave it a try because I wanted to get that better gut health. I wanted to have the sustained energy. You got to support the immune system, especially this time of the year. And I hated taking all those pills and vitamins to actually get all those supplements, and it tastes great as well. I take it in the morning before I start my day, before I make that cup of coffee, and it makes me feel ready to take on everything that we've got going on here at KCSN. And you know, all great athletes take care of their body. I'm not the same kind of athlete as Patrick Mahomes, but I still like to take care of my body, and that's when I've been going to AG1. That's why I'm a huge fan. You get all of that nutrition in just one little cup. It's great for long-term gut health support, as well with 75 high-quality ingredients that give me key daily nutrients. If a comprehensive solution is what you need from your supplemental routine, then Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to athleticgreens.com/KCSN. That's athleticgreens.com/KCSN. Check it out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Welcome back to this special live episode of Outside the Trenches. I'm BJ Kissel, joined by Jordan Foote, Craig Stout, and Tucker Franklin. Just broke down the Charles Omenihu signing by the Kansas City Chiefs, adding the veteran defensive lineman. And now it is time for everybody's favorite that listens to Outside the Trenches, our blind nil segment, and it's Craig's first time. So I'm gonna go first, guys, because I'm kind of excited about this one, because I spent the first segment talking about how the Chiefs seem to do this every year, where they plug those holes that we see out there and they bring in these veterans, these guys that can step in and play right away, and it gives them all kinds of flexibility for the draft. So with that said, they've already had offensive tackle. We saw that with Jarwan Taylor. Defensive end, obviously Charles Omenihu. If you guys had to say, what's the other kind of need as far as areas of the roster that's pretty light right now? If you could go out and get one guy, I'm hoping we're all on the same page thinking wide receiver. Like, if there's one wide receiver the Chiefs could either sign or trade for, that would be the perfect scenario for you, who would that be? And Jordan, I'm going to start with you.
I think the easy one is Juju Smith-Schuster, but I'm going to go Odell Beckham Jr. I think I don't know what the money's going to be reported, maybe $15 million for him, which seems a little bit rich considering he hasn't really proven himself in a little bit and is coming off the injury. But man, if he is back, he's super dynamic. He's going to give Patrick, like, I can just tell him and Patrick Mahomes would get a really good rapport going. He's a player that's extremely, I think, even still very athletic, even as he's past 30, even as he has the ACL injury on his resume, I guess, if you want to call it that. He's a player that frees up a little bit of opportunity for Sky Moore. There's not a lot of redundancy there. Like, they could use a player like him. I think Odell's dynamic. I think he's fun. I think the ego stuff is overblown from people on Twitter. He's going to prove valuable for some team. I think he could benefit from being on a contender. I think he could benefit from being on the Chiefs, and I think they'd benefit from adding him into the fold.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it? I can remember I saw Odell Beckham Giants highlights the other day. I think they were showing reruns of Odell Beckham with the Giants. And he was on the field at the same time as, like, Eli Manning. I thought, wow, that seems like it was a long time ago.
We were like 14 or 15 when that happened.
I'm pretty sure.
Maybe a little bit older, but we were young that when that happened.
You guys got to cut this old stuff out. No.
No, I was definitely in high school when the catch happened.
And it's just for his workout. Not to fan the flames anymore. And I know fans are tired of talking about it. Seems like we've been talking about him for 2 years, which is exactly how he wants it. And every wideout wants it. But Chiefs were at his workout.
Did you see how cool he looked catching that ball with the one hand? Like, that was really cool. I was watching that video and I thought, how practical is any of this? Like, if this was a whole workout, like, I'm just catching the ball one-handed. How practical is that? I hope he did, like, actual routes instead of just, like, running across the back of the end zone and just snagging balls one-handed.
Nobody wants to see a slant, Tucker. They just want to see him snag it one-handed, chalking down the field.
Michael Thomas wants to see a slant.
Yes, he does. Slant boy. No, I think there was a little bit of a pipe dream there for a little bit that Michael Thomas was going to come to Kansas City. He obviously returns to New Orleans. But I think
we did Rick.
Yeah.
Right. That's all it took.
I think the big one for me, it's going to be an easy answer. It's DeAndre Hopkins. I think that he makes this team a whole lot more fun. And I think we all agree, BJ, as you mentioned, I think we all agree wide receiver is the one that makes the most sense. If you can take some pressure off of Sky Moore, off of Kadarius Toney, that is chef's kiss. Like, that is exactly what you want to do at this point. And if you can take it the pressure off with a discounted DeAndre Hopkins, I think that would be quite a good thing for Patrick Mahomes to have, quite a nice weapon for him to be, because he can do pretty much everything. And I just love watching him play football, and I would love to watch him play football in my favorite team's jersey.
Yeah, that would be – I really wonder what his trade market is. Jalen Ramsey going for a third-round draft pick has me just all kinds of confused, because Jalen Ramsey, in my opinion – is still easily a top three or four cornerback in the league. And yes, that contract is expensive, but DeAndre Hopkins is going to be expensive. Older is not probably in the top three or four wide receivers in the league. Still really good, don't get me wrong. So probably top 10. But is that a fourth? Like, what are we talking about there? It might be low enough where all of a sudden it makes a lot of sense for a team like the Chiefs, reportedly. The Cardinals wanted a second. I don't think they're going to get that. I just don't think they're going to get that. So my guy would have been DeAndre Hopkins, but I'm going to go a little curveball here. Go with Darius Slayton from the Giants here. Guy that has a little bit of vertical ability there. Has three seasons over 720 yards receiving, playing in that Giants offense that hasn't had a ton of great quarterbacks and hasn't had a ton of guys to take kind of the pressure off of him from a receiving standpoint. Really had just 1 year, 2 years ago, where didn't have a particularly good performance, happened to coincide with Daniel Jones's arguably worst year as a starter. His best year as a starter was last year, and, you know, Darius Slayton really kind of rebounded again with 10.2 yards per target. 15.7 yards per reception, went for 724 yards and a couple of touchdowns. I just think he's probably going to be a guy underneath, you know, $8 or $9 million that would fit really nicely in what Kansas City does. Does not solve like a wide receiver one problem for them, but much like we talked about in the defensive line earlier, enough guys to throw in different specific situations, kind of like last year with the Chiefs, to where you could put Slayton on the field and feel pretty confident in what he's going to be able to do alongside Kelce, Tony, MVS, and Sky Moore.
Hey, Craig, you know who does solve that wide receiver one problem?
Who?
DeAndre Hopkins solves that problem. I'm sorry, I'm going to hop on that. Don't tell me about the money, the compensation, like you talked about, third round picks. I don't care. I'm getting excited. It's the middle of the offseason. This is when we get to talk about these kinds of things. I just want to see DeAndre Hopkins, who I've been a huge fan, think he was a top three receiver for the last like decade since he down in Houston, that I just want to see what he could do, what a talent like that could do with Patrick Mahomes in both of their primes. Like, this is the Tom Brady, Randy Moss. I'm going there with this because I think he could be that good. But there are other options. You bring up Juju Smith-Schuster earlier, trying to bring him back in this situation. Talk about Darius Slayton, Odell Beckham, and then Adam Thielen is the other guy to throw his name out there as a veteran receiver that I believe I saw on Pat McAfee that there's been conversations, not surprising, that Brett Veach and company will make calls on absolutely everybody to see, you know, kind of what the asking price is, because the Chiefs do need wide receivers. They need numbers just from a strictly roster building standpoint. And so Thielen makes sense. Everybody that you've talked about makes sense. But the one that gets me excited that I want to talk about in the middle of the offseason is DeAndre Hopkins, for obvious reasons. Just go Google. And some people told me he was washed, so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and watch his highlights from last year. And it's still sick. All I remember from watching his highlights is Kyler Murray is not great. He is not a very accurate quarterback because he left so many yards on the field with throwing behind him. He's making these crazy catches on these post routes that he's absolutely wide open for. There's no reason for him to have to dive for the football, and there's nobody around, and that's what's happening. So that was my takeaway from his highlights, is not washed. And holy cow, Patrick Mahomes has spoiled a lot of us for watching football.
Well, and BJ, sorry to cut you off, Tuck. You triggered something in my memory. I'm tired of people acting like just because he makes those contested catches that that's all he can do. They're like, oh, the Chiefs need someone who can get open and find soft spots and zones and beat man coverage. I'm like, what the hell do you think DeAndre Hopkins has been doing for his whole career exactly? Like, that is what he's been making a living off of, and he can do the contested catches, and he has great hands, and he's just a fantastic player. He's not this incredibly, absolutely insane gifted athlete. Like, he is a technician. He's a fantastic player. He understands leverage. He understands coverage schemes. Like, he is a complete wide receiver and a wide receiver one. I know that he's been banged up. I know that he's hashtag an old player, especially for the Chiefs purposes, but he's still really good. He'd still easily be the best wide receiver on the team, even if they brought back Juju Smith-Schuster, even if they brought in Odell Beckham Jr., he'd still be comfortably the best wideout on the team. So he's been good. He's still good. He's made a living off stuff like that.
And I know it kind of goes against everything that they've done, is not older, banged up players that they're giving a lot of money to. They just don't do that. I understand that. It doesn't have to make sense right now, but if they do it, you can't tell me everybody wouldn't be excited, because the one thing we can all agree on is I don't think Brett Veach is going to allow Patrick Mahomes not to be surrounded by weapons that he can go out and get the ball and guys who can go make plays. There's only so many ways that you can add talent. Free agency one, draft is another. I just don't see them banking on the draft to count on a receiver to get a certain amount of production, because you haven't seen that in Andy Reid's tenure in Kansas City. It takes these wide receivers a little bit of time to get comfortable with this offense, to go out and make plays. Just wide receiver just takes a little bit, Tucker.
It does indeed. And another guy that I've been thinking about is DJ Chark, just because of his age. I know he's not necessarily that veteran wide receiver one type guy, but man, he'd be fun with Patrick Mahomes, and just that age again of it's something that we're really making a concerted effort of looking at guys that are younger. I think that's an interesting one. And Craig, to your Darius Slayton point, you made me think of this stat, this Daniel Jones stat. Mm-hmm. In his career, he has never thrown for more touchdowns than games played in a season. So he has never thrown for more touchdowns than games he's played
what
in a season.
Stat! That's wonderful. That is awesome. That really is incredible.
I was going to say the only quarterback to do that, but that can't be true. But it feels like he's got to be the only like starting quarterback of recent memory to do that, because I saw that the other day and I thought, that is insane.
And he got paid.
He did. He got, pretty, he got $45 million, dollars, right?
And got Darren Waller.
Darren Waller.
No. Brian Daboll got
that's,
paid. Let's be real here. Let's be real.
I still kind of like the Giants, though. I'm not going to lie. Like, I like the move. The Waller move with Saquon coming off that season and the ascending they were going. Like, I'm.
And that defense is legit. Like, it's fun. Yep.
So I was trying to look up the crazy stat. You were talking about crazy stats. And I was trying to look up the Mahomes one where he's only had, like, I think it's less than five games in his career. He's lost by more than one possession.
Yeah. No, that's not a Daniel Jones stat. I'll tell you that. Daniel Jones.
80 games played. So anyway, all right, that was our first blind nil. Jordan, you're up, buddy.
So I was thinking about mine before while you guys were just chatting, and I quickly realized how flawed my logic is for my blind nil, but bear with me here. I was thinking about contracts. I was thinking about free agency, and I was like, let's take some positions that the Chiefs have young players at. Center, right guard, running back, wide receiver, defensive end, quarterback. What would those guys fetch on the open market? Who would you be comfortable paying them in relation to? But then I was like, well, by the time Isaiah Pacheco hits the open market, the running back contracts are going to be completely different. So if the Chiefs cut the following position players, and we'll go one by one.
Okay.
Where do you think they'd land? So let's go Isaiah Pacheco. Let's say he's a free agent today. I will put the cutoff at Tony Pollard making $10 million per year and below. Let's pick out Najee Harris making $3 million per year. Is that a fair range, you guys think?
I mean, I would guess that Isaiah Pacheco, just because of his upside and the fact that he's proven a lot of the stuff that people had questions about in his seventh round grade. I think it's funny when you listen to like Dane Brugler talk about him. He's like, yeah, I reviewed my scouting report for him and I was like, why didn't I love this guy more? You know, and it was just questions about vision, size, and ability to hold up, and he's fully proved that. So I think that he's probably a $5 or $6 million guy, and I know that that's a lot for a running back, but I think you'd find a lot of people that are willing to give him the workload and trust in him to do that. And he caught the ball pretty well, growing as a pass protector. Like, I think that everything is upside with him, to the point where we're talking about moving on from a first-round draft pick for a seventh-rounder because of one year. So, yeah, I'd pay him $5 or $6 million probably.
I'm just looking at the running back contracts that have been signed. Jeff Wilson, 2 years, 8.2. Samaje Perine, 2 years, 7.5. Raheem Mostert, for 5.6. All of those, I feel like, could really be in the realistic ballpark for Isaiah Pacheco. So, like, if he hit the market this season, he could be top three in terms of running back total sign this year.
Yeah, I think David Montgomery just got 18 over three. I think he got $6 million per on the deal that he just signed. So, yeah, I agree with everything Craig said. That was very, very well stated.
All right. I also realize how long this can take if we do a deep dive in each player. So let's go. Kadarius Toney, what does he get on this lousy wide receiver market? If Alan Lazard and Jacoby Myers are getting $11 million per, I know Toney hasn't built up the resume yet. What does he get?
That's a good question. I don't know if he hits $11 million. I think he's probably, I don't want to say like $2 million.
But that depends on the incentives.
Right.
Heavily incentivized.
I think you're right. I think any deal he signs going forward is going to be an incentivized deal. You would have to think that just because of his track record of health and everything like that. But looking at other markets, I mean, I just saw Noah Brown sign with Houston for 1 year, $2.6 million. He's probably getting more than that, but he's not getting Bobby Trees money. He's not getting Jacoby Myers or Alan Lazard money. So he's
Russell Gage, 8.5. Cedric Wilson Jr., 7.3.
I mean,
Braxton
probably
Berrios, 6 million.
The incentives would push it there. I think you could sign an incentive deal up to 7 or 8 million for it, but so much of those incentives are health related. It's just being available, being on the field that makes so much of a difference. I mean, let's see, played
two games for the Giants at the beginning of the year last year, three for the Chiefs before missing another three, and then played four to close out the regular season before they went into the playoffs there. And we know that he was a little banged up through a lot of that. So it just remains to be seen. I do think that $7 or $8 million is probably right, but a lot of that is going to be incentive later.
He's an interesting one because a year from now, if he's the one who could probably make the most money by having a healthy year where he goes out and is healthy for a year and shows athleticism with Andy Reid having an offseason to game plan for him, he'll get to show NFL teams kind of like his ceiling of how he could be used. If you go out there and stays healthy, he would get significantly more money. One team would fall in love and say, you know what? It was all fluke. He can stay healthy. We just saw what he was able to do. He's in the perfect situation. It was the perfect move for him to come here because he is going to be in that situation the next couple of years. If he can stay healthy and make all those plays, somebody at this time in the future is going to be sitting there and there's going to be one GM that's like, we can get the most out of him and they're going to pay him.
Yeah. I'm just looking at other market values of free agents currently on SpotTrack. Matt Collins is at 2.4 APY. And I can't, let me find the other one that I had. I think it was, Marvin Jones is at 3. So, I don't think that that's unrealistic for him to be from, 3 to 5, 3 to 7 in that range. But, right, as Craig has mentioned, it's going to be a heavy incentive-laden contract. So, that's interesting.
All right, I'm going to pick out two more. I'm going to skip a few. This one might be quick. It might be not. Jason Kelce got 14-point-some-odd million for the upcoming season. If Creed Humphrey, who's been a really, really damn good player, becomes a free agent, let's see, we've got Ryan Jensen, $13 million, Eric McCoy, $12 million, Rodney Hudson, $10 million. He tops out. He gets double digits, right? Mitch Morse, 9.75. He's really good.
Yeah, he absolutely gets double digits. I would probably say that he's going to break Kelce's number. Like, if it had to happen right now, I think it would be malpractice by his agent not to break Travis or Jason Kelce's number of 14.5 million, because he's on the same level. Like, those are your two all-pro centers. Those are the two guys that are at the very top. So if Kelce's getting 14.5 at his age, there's absolutely no reason that Creed Humphrey's not going to blow it out to $15, $16, $17 million if he's on the open market right now. That is a bill that is going to come due for the Chiefs sooner rather than later. I am very curious to see what they do about him next offseason when they can pay him. They just decide to kick the can another year, or if they decide to try and pull the trigger on that early.
Well, if you look at the other deals that have been signed, this is a conversation I had with Matt Lane when we were doing our live show. It's a conversation I had with Matt Hamilton as well. Ben Powers gets 4 years for 51. Nate Davis, 3 years for 30. I mean, there's some massive contracts signed. That's just the guard market, right? So, I mean, you're talking about Trey Smith, but you're thinking they're going to fetch around kind of the same money there. So it's an option. It's something that the Chiefs are going to have to think about, because I don't know. It's going to be tough to sink that much capital into the offensive line when you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. Maybe that makes sense to do that.
Do it.
It's a lot of money. That's a lot of money going into the offensive line when you start to think about all of that. So I think they got to pay Creed, which, interesting, I saw somebody bring up, they let Mitch Morse go, they let Rodney Hudson go.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. They haven't paid centers, and they've had two of the best in the NFL during their stretches.
Right, so I don't know if that's something that they think that they can get another center and be fine, or if they want Creed. I guess it depends on Patrick Mahomes, right? What Patrick but.
Creed is also 23 years old, and he's a second-team All-Pro. So, he's going to get the first center in NFL.
Might be the exception.
A 7 or 8 year deal. It's like he became a free agent at 23.
So, I saw, BJ, you're muted. Now we're talking. I saw Corey Johnson in the comments bring up trading Legarius Sneed. That's the last player I wanted to bring up, really the big one of this group. We saw Jamel Dean go for reportedly settling, I don't know if it was actually settling, $13 million a year. Legarius Sneed's going to get paid by somebody. I think he has a little bit more value to the Chiefs than to other teams. With that said, he's young. He is versatile. He's a good player. There aren't really a lot of downsides to what he can offer a team. What does he go for either when he hits free agency or if he just hit free agency this offseason? This is the toughest one, I think, because it's like
Jarrell's need takes. I'm actually fairly confident in what it is. Byron Murphy just got 2 years for $22 million. Byron Murphy is a guy that plays in the slot, kicks outside, is arguably a better cover player than L'Jarius Sneed, not his impact on the field. Sneed's impact on the field as a blitzer, as a run stuffer, it is immense in Steve Spagnuolo's scheme. But with Jamel Dean getting roughly that amount of money and Byron Murphy getting roughly that amount of money, L'Jarius Sneed's a little older. Like, I think he's probably 10 and a half, 11's his ceiling, maybe, with the way that the NFL viewed him, especially coming out, the high praise that they've had for Byron Murphy, basically roughing through everything in Arizona lately. I can see L'Jarius Sneed basically making that on the market right now, especially with this draft class being so good at corner this year. I just think he'd be a little bit devalued. Next year is probably the year for him to hit free agency if he's looking to make more money.
Craig, again, as always, takes the words right out of my mouth. No, you look at the market that some of these secondary guys have signed. I just searched by secondary because L'Jarius Sneed just has that versatility. What was the word that you used, Craig? Flexibility?
Flexibility.
There you go. He has that. So, I mean, he can get all kinds of money. And it's an interesting, we've talked about it, it feels like, a lot about trading L'Jarius Sneed and if it makes sense or not. But he's going to get his money, depending on whoever it is, wherever it is. But I think that, like, if he has a really good year next year, I think he could reset a market.
Yeah, I think good.
Yep.
Let's go. Keep it going.
Your blind nail, Tucker. Let's do this, baby.
Well, okay, fine. Before I get to my blind nail, we're going to need to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, your home for the best coverage on your favorite local teams. Whether you're a Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, KC Current, K-State, KU, or Mizzou fan, we've got you covered. Find KCSN on your favorite podcast platform.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.
All right. My blind nil here, BJ, you took mine, so I had to quickly think of another one. And I want to kind of pivot and think about what these free agent signings mean for the draft. So we talk about pick 31 a lot, and the Chiefs don't like to have glaring needs going into the draft. So I want your guys' opinion now that they've kind of addressed the two biggest concerns. What position do you think they'll draft at number 31, or do you think they'll stay at 31?
I think they're going to stay at 31, and I think that they're going to best player available is the cheap Maddie answer for all of this, but I'm going to take a stand. I think they're going to draft a tackle, and I think it's going to be the best left tackle or the best right tackle. First round tackles matter, and you don't see guys, especially after about pick 20, the success rate falls off pretty immensely. So I can see the Chiefs trying to catch a guy at the end of this, take a right tackle or take a left tackle, and just play Juwan Taylor at the other one and profit, because you need young guys on that line with your, if you're going to be paying
Creed Humphrey. You're paying Joe Tooney. If you want to pay Trey Smith, you got to pay Juwan Taylor already. Take a young guy at tackle, stay at 31, and just kind of profit off of the fact that you filled a bunch of needs.
Like it.
I do too. We should just let Craig answer everything.
I hate this segment now because it's just we have to
kick it to Craig first and last and in the middle every time.
BJ, who are you picking at 31, buddy? What position?
I would go tackle. I think that that makes the most sense right now for the versatility. I wouldn't, if you ask me today, a wide receiver, I like the idea. I think it makes sense, but I think over the next week or so, I have no reason to believe this. I just, rookie wide receivers counting on that production, like I mentioned earlier, just don't see that necessarily being the case. But that might change if once we get through the next 2 weeks of free agency based on what we've seen so far. So, Chuck, you're killing me right now.
Right now.
Oh, man. We'll get into all this later with what's going on behind the scenes. But anyway, you could talk me into a lot of positions. There for a while to throw a completely different position out there, and I understand.
Don't say it.
Positional versatility. Michael Mayer at Notre Dame, if you take a tight end at that point because of the depth of the tight end class and because it could be seen as kind of a luxury in a way compared to tackling some of the other positions, you find me a tight end that can move and do different things athletically, a top guy. I could be talked into that, Craig.
I could too. I don't like that you keep throwing back to me, though. Jordan, who are you picking at 30?
You're the one that's really nodding. I'm not going anywhere near Tucker right now.
No. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm together. We're all right. I think that the Chiefs should stay away from running back as far away as from running back as possible. And then I think that they should take a wide receiver, and I think they should trade up for a wide receiver. And I think that that would be very fun for the Chiefs to do. Now, does it make a lot of sense? Probably not, but I think it would. We're again in that territory of thinking of really fun things for our football team to do that might not make a whole lot of sense. So I think that getting a wide receiver, maybe trading up a little ways in the draft and getting one, because the Chiefs have 153 picks, I think, in this draft, and they'll be able to give up a couple, and they don't have enough room to have all of the draft picks that they're going to make end up on a roster. So I would like to see the Chiefs move up, be aggressive in the draft, go get a guy that they really like, whether that's a wide receiver. Hey, maybe another defensive back early in the first round and get a guy like that. So we'll see.
You can still take an edge rusher at this point.
You could still take an edge rusher. I like Jalen Duncan a lot. I also think 31 is probably too rich for him. I think he does need to fill out his frame and get stronger before he's ready to hold down a left tackle spot or possibly even a right tackle spot full-time in the NFL in year one. I think you could go like a Darnell Wright or DeJuan Jones. Like, there are options there that you could go at tackle. I think edge, like that drop-off, kind of severe from the very, very top to the next tier, but then there's a bunch of guys like in the middle of this draft class, meaning like end of round one, round two, potentially even early round three. Felix from K-State, his stock continues to rise after he had a really good, I don't want to say showing, but like he showed up and weighed in and measured, and that was a plus. His stock is going to keep going up. I'm going to say, and I really have a hard time kind of figuring out where this guy's going to go, and a lot of it is centered around how he runs, JSN. I think JSN is a really, really, really good football player. I think I could see a scenario where the Chiefs would have to trade up somewhat considerably for him, and I'm a little bit off the board with that. I do have minor concerns, but I think like if you want to plug and play wideout, just put out there and do some of the same stuff Juju does, win in those areas, be a really good, well-rounded target, not track star speed or anything. I hate to be that guy. His game speed doesn't really alarm me at all. I think he's a really good player. They're going to have options. Zay Flowers was the answer probably 2-3 months ago. People finally caught on to him, and now he's going to be nowhere near pick 31. So I think, again, I word vomited 3 or 4 different players. The moral of the story is I think they're going to have options.
All right. I got my blind nil. I'll make it super quick. Debut, a blind nil right here. Charles Omenihue has signed. I think we all feel very confident that Chris Jones is going to lead the team in sacks this year. Who is second in the team in sacks. And it could be somebody that's not on the roster yet, if you feel so bold. BJ, who you got first, buddy?
I'm going to go with the guy that threatened to beat the rookie sack record for Chiefs franchise history in George Karlaftis. Went after Derek Thomas's record very valiantly. I would go with George Karlaftis. I think we talk a lot about guys in their second year. I think it was a really telling thing. We talked about it on our show. I'm sure you guys talked about it on the lab quite a bit as well, that he got better towards the end of the year. You know, you talk about rookie walls and things that those guys run into with as much football as they were playing, as much physicality, as many snaps as George Karlaftis was playing early in the season, and that he was ascending and playing his best football towards the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. So I'm going to go with George Karlaftis because he gets to spend his entire offseason training to play football for the Kansas City Chiefs, not training to look good in front of NFL teams to try and become a first-round pick. And so I'm going to go with George Karlaftis, guys.
Jordan, who you got, buddy?
All right, BJ, forgive me for not knowing the rules. Can I pick the same one as you, or would you prefer that I pick someone else, even if I'm not like 100% sure it's going to happen?
I want you to speak your truth.
Effort, Tucker.
My truth is George Karlaftis. I really do think it's going to be George. I think he's going to have a good second year. I think he had a good first year. He really came alive down the stretch. I think Mike Dana might be a sneaky player to watch because if that number is like 6.5 or 7, and Dana does step up this year and does know he wants to get paid, and George just replicates like 5.5, 6 sacks, I think that's possible. But if I had to vote, I think the vote goes to George.
If you have everybody listening out there, go and listen to our interview with Chiefs defensive line coach Joe Cullen from the NFL Scouting Combine, because he spoke very high praise of Mike Dana, basically saying, if you gave me a team full of Mike Danas, I'd be really happy. And Craig, you'll be the only person here that gets this. All I heard was, give me 53 Lance Longs.
That's Longs, baby. Yeah.
These other two youngins have no idea what that is. So shout out in the chat room if you understood that reference. But yeah, sorry to jump in there.
A lot of guys in the chat, a lot of people in the chat also agreeing with both Jordan and BJ, saying that they think George Karlaftis. BJ, I got to go with Mike Dana just because he's going to have at least, I think, right, there you go. We all know Mike Dana's getting 6 sacks against the Chargers alone. He is a divisional killer, and he's going to get all of his sacks in the times that it means the most. Colin Saunders, I saw a shout out to Derek Hernandez for saying Colin Saunders in the chat there.
And is this him back? Somebody just asked in the chat. It scrolled so fast. There's a lot of comments, but yeah. Somebody saying, does this move do anything about the possible retention of Colin Saunders? Craig, I know you hate me throwing it to you. I'm going to say no. They don't play the same position. They're not used in the same way. And so I don't think Charles Minnu coming in has anything to do with whether or not the Chiefs would retain and pay Colin Saunders beyond this year.
Collins more of a one tech. They don't really have a one tech on the roster right now. Even Turk Wharton is light. Charles Aminihu is light. Chris Jones is not light, but is a large human being that's going to lose leverage inside. So would Charles Aminihu. So Collins still makes a ton of sense for this team as a one tech there. I'm going with Aminihu. We have seen what the 49ers did with Aminihu, the amount of snaps that he played on the edge, the amount of snaps that he played on the interior. He was lined up all over the place. And what we just got done witnessing was Mike Dana in year one under Joe Cullen progressing as a player that's basically the spike on a tech stunt, a guy that's being a secondary piece to a rush, winning. Because guys are trying to pay too much attention to Chris Jones, or guys are trying to pay too much attention to Frank Clark or George Karlaftis. I think Charles Aminihu is going to get a little bit overlooked because he's coming in here. He's going to be lining up everywhere. It's going to be tough to keep track of him, tough to set protections to him. Chris Jones is, I think, the only one that's going to outquick him to a sack on this team. And with that being said, in San Francisco, there was an arsenal of guys that could outquick him to the sack. So I think a lot of those sacks would be sacks last year. He had 4.5. I think that bumps up to 6, 6.5, 7 this year, even if he does have to miss some time. I think he can still contend for that number two spot. It's just going to be how good of a season does George have to see if he can just get in front of that.
Can't wait to see till those DraftKings numbers come out, what the sack totals are going to be next year. Tucker will be all over it, and we will be covering it at KC Sports Network as soon as that happens. Guys, Before we wrap up this show, one quick question. I just want to get your quick thoughts on this because it just dawned on me. We're talking about all the draft picks the Chiefs have, and we looked at what they did and we saw what they did in the draft last year. What happened? And I know I'm just pouring the Kool-Aid, just dumping it all in my head right now. But what happens if the Chiefs have a draft in 2023 like they did last year and they hit as often and as well, maybe on the offensive side, maybe both, whatever, so much to talk about with the defense outside of Pacheco. But imagine, Jordan, if the Chiefs hit on a draft this year like they did last year.
If they can avoid dipping into the Patrick Mahomes money this offseason, which it's growing increasingly less likely, I think that they're not going to be able to do it, if I phrase that correctly. But if they hit at 50%, 60%, if they hit 75% of what they hit last year, they don't even have to replicate that. It's going to be a near home run of a draft class. If they do the same thing, the rest of the NFL might as well just stop because you're getting cost-controlled production. You're still getting a first-round pick there. You're getting different positions. They can only draft so many running backs and linebackers before they have to move on to something else. Like, if they get four worthwhile contributors in year one out of this draft class, or really even three, I think that'd be a really big deal.
You could have more than half your starters on first or second year deals
no.
on a Super Bowl team.
That is ideal for the Kansas City Chiefs. Less than ideal for the rest of the AFC West, who have made some questionable, if best, moves. Speaking of the AFC West, before we hopped on, old friend Michael Burton signed a one-year deal with the Denver Broncos. That kind of happened at the same exact time as the Amedo Hussein signing came out. So the Chiefs are looking for a fullback. They're in that fullback market. Maybe call Sherm, see if he's still feeling up to it.
I'll tell you what, they Chiefs retained Jody Fortson on an RFA tender today as well. Put Noah Gray at fullback.
There you go.
Let's get it going. Let's have some fun with a true sniffer on this offense.
Or Colin Saunders at fullback.
I was going to say, yeah, they could bring Bink back.
Colin deserves four touchdowns this season for them missing that one this season. I'm still bitter about it. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and I'm still bitter about them missing a touchdown to Colin Saunders.
I'm still bitter about, I think it was the Raiders. I should know that. The Raiders called timeout when Colin Saunders, and that was going to Colin. That was his time to shine.
Also, Joe Colin said
a touchdown.
That. Yes.
That was right. I was going to out him, Tucker. That's twice. That's twice in this show you're getting dipped. All right. We appreciate everybody for hanging out on this live episode. Again, please hit the like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube and follow us. If this is your first time hanging out, go check out the other videos. Check out that interview with Joe Colin from a couple weeks ago with Sean Barber and myself from the NFL Scouting Combine. Appreciate everybody for hanging out. We'll see y'all next time.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all six of our channels at KCSN, covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current. Plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.